Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet, and blessed be, heed the words I call to thee. Honour the old ones in name and deed, hearken not to others' greed. Pray to the moon when she is round, luck with you shall then abound. Respect the earth, the sky, the sea, as you will it, so mote it be. Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron, on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, merry meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Like the guy said, I'm Marla Brooks, and this week I've got not one but two great guests who have co-authored a new book called Phantom Messages. Now, William J. Hall is the author of the paranormal bestseller, The World's Most Haunted House and The Haunted House Diaries, and if you're a listener of the show, you will remember that. And he's also an experienced researcher of the unexplained, from folklore and urban legend to fortune-telling, the pyramids, and other mysterious tales. And he's been interviewed around the world, and his syndicated column, Magic and the Unknown, ran for 6 years in multiple newspapers. And, like I said, been a guest here on Stirring the Cauldron, and it's nice having him back. And then we've got Jimmy Pettinito, who began investigating the paranormal with Ed and Lorraine Warren, and has been doing and exploring it for over 30 years. He's appeared on numerous television shows, such as Sightings, Unsolved Mysteries, Primetime Live, and Hostage to the Devil. And his cases have been featured on shows such as Canada's Scariest Night of My Life. Now, Jimmy's also the host of a popular radio program, The Haunted Chronicles, and it's nice having him join us for a first time as well. So, Bill, Jimmy, thank you both for such a thought-provoking book and for coming along and sharing it with us this evening.
Thank you for that great intro, Marla.
I'm out of air now.
Yeah.
They say two is as easy as one. Not always, but but it's good. I'm really glad that you guys are here. And, you know, did the idea of writing this book come initially from personal experiences you've both had over the years and then expanded into other experiences as well? Or what kickstarted it?
I had an experience as a child with a radio, but that's not why we got the idea. Bill, you want to tell them how we got the idea?
Okay. Well, Jimmy called me up and said, you know, I want to do a book, and he mentioned some, you know, urban legends and stuff. I said, well, that's cool, and I love that stuff, but I don't know. I said, what you know, I think it would not only sell better, but I said, geez, with your experience, it you know, it just seems, you know, a shame not to do that. And I said, I'll give you an example of some of the books, that ideas that I had that I never, you know, did anything with. And one of them was something on phone calls of the dead. Then we got talking about that. And because we both kind of were, you know, both were fascinated by that, as so many other people were. Mm-hmm. And we started talking and said, well, of course, we don't want to redo that. And I know Callum Cooper kind of did an updated version of that that was very good.
He scared the bejesus out of me. Sorry to interrupt, but Cal Cooper scared the bejesus out of me on my show about that, because he did the thing about never pick up the phone if the caller ID goes 00000. I swear I never picked up another phone call that didn't have a number on it. So yeah, but I love Cal. He's been on the show a lot too.
He said that. I'm shocked, because all zeros is not what that's. I forget what that means, but there is a technical meaning to that. That's not a mystery. I'm surprised he said that, because he's pretty scientific. But anyhow,
yeah, he is. That, yeah, maybe he's changed.
So Jimmy and I started talking. We said, you know, we wondered what happened with phantom messages, you know, with these kinds of things. I mean, are they texting now? Are they, you know, what are they doing with computers? We know electronics was always a thing, but we also know that this stuff happens with pen and paper and chalk and, you know, all sorts of stuff. But we started thinking about it. Well, it also happens, like, you know, in the extraterrestrial kind of, in that lore there, it happens in, you know, the family and loved ones, you get the answering machine message and all that, but it happens across the board, and it's like in all the literature scattered. And we said, well, what if we really just looked at phantom messages that come in all different forms, and whether it's in a haunted part of a haunting or not part of a haunting, whether it looks like a time slip, whether it's alien related versus, you know, dear Aunt Sue, you know, and then we got really excited, because now it was different. Now it was a real, you know, across the spectrum kind of collection of cases. And so then, you know, we said, wow, then that sounds really good. So we said, hey, let's do it. You know,
hey, Bill, can I add that we also wanted unexpected messages, not if you're in a haunted house requesting EVPs or anything. We wanted unexpected messages from computers, telephones, or whatever.
Well, you know, I really... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, that was critical, because we wanted it to be a nice focus on just these really bizarre kind of communications that are unexpected, unexplained, and see what the commonalities and differences are.
You've got a lot of good stuff in there like that. But, you know, I started to chuckle, because when I first opened the book, you know, in the front of the book, there's always people that write how, you know, not validations, I can't even think of the word now, but, you know, you have it in the front of the book.
Endorsement.
Thank you. Yeah. That'll do it. And I really liked what our mutual friend Nick Redfern commented about the book, because he said that the book warns that when our cell phones ring, the caller may not be human. And I'm pretty sure he wasn't talking about telemarketers <That's> either.
Right. Yeah, no, they're much scarier. No.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you can hang up on them. They're not quite as compelling, though, either. But when I read that, I mean, he specifically said that cell phones and the other day, I had a cell phone thing happen that truly made me wonder about them, because I had an insurance company call, or I had to call an insurance company, and this is really strange. So I got the number off the back of my insurance card, and when I dialed the number, the recorded answering said, this is the company, you know, that I called. But then it jumped into one of those, well, you're entitled to get a $100 gift certificate from Walmart. And I thought, wait a minute.
Oh, my God.
So then it said, press 1 to find out how. And then it hung up on me. So I called back again. It happened again. The third time, I just, you know, wanted to figure out what the hell was going on. So I said, let me try a landline. So I got right through the company without the Walmart junk. So my best guess is that anything that works with signals and frequencies can easily get pirated or something by just about anyone, either living dead or from another planet or whatever.
That's why we look for, you know, multiple characteristics or indicators. So in other words, there's different types of phantom messages. There's the one that it happens to just one person, right? So it's not that we think they're lying, but if you're one person and you say, I swear it was real, I wasn't hallucinating. The whole thing about hallucinating is you don't know you're hallucinating. You know what I mean? However, obviously, then if you hear enough of those stories with the same kind of characteristics, then you say, hey, you know, I think we have something here. You know, everybody's not hallucinating the same way or, you know, or that kind of thing. But then sometimes there's multiple indicators that gives you like more insight, because sometimes you don't have a lot of insight. It's that weird voice and that weird call interruption. And then there's other times when you have a lot of insight, like, oh, that was a little girl from the camp the campsite that interrupted our phone call, you know, where you actually know, you know, you have more indicators, you know. Almost like, you know, my own story that's in there where I'm like, I don't know, because it was a kind of a one-time thing. Yes, it was me and a friend, so there was two people, but it, you know, was it just something that happened or was it something paranormal? There was only one thing. If there was multiple indicators, I could have been more certain. You know what I mean? We have the gamut of those kinds of different, you know, levels of cases in there.
And you're really good about, in the book, about doing that. I mean, everything has, it's not just, well, here's this and here's that. I mean, there was research, there's writing, there's you know, the way you put it together, you know, it shows that you're taking this seriously and not just, you know, like some people that go out ghost hunting and, oh, look, did you hear that? Never mind. Don't get me on my soapbox now. But we've got a question from chat room. And Tabby would like to ask both of you, why do you think spirits use the telephone to convey messages? And she's asking because she received many calls after her mother passed.
Wow, that's really cool. Oh, what did her mother say? Did her mother, like, talk to her, like, you know, like a regular conversation? And sorry, I don't mean to get off. I'm fascinated by it.
No, that's fine. And we've got a 30-second delay, so she can answer back. That's
okay. The question is why, and we don't know. But it seems that it's easier for them to communicate through electronics, and we're still trying to figure that out, right, Bill?
Yeah, I mean that's why we included the Tesla quote about you know, Tesla said he saw the future and saying, "Hey, if the secret to the universe is going to lie in." Frequency, vibration, and something else. I always forget the third one. But the important one in this case, frequency. So it might be a matter of, like Jimmy said, that it's easier, or it could be a matter that they happen to, boom, end up there. You know, that it's just it is easier, but it could either be conscious, meaning trying to do it, or they may not be trying to do it. It may just be easy to get caught up in that, just like a whirlpool. You may not be trying to go around in a circle, but hey, you're caught up in it and you're going, you know.
You might even be
like, oh, hey, this is cool. I'm in the middle of their phone call. I can talk to them, you know. Who knows? I mean, you know, that is part of the, you know, the fun of it. And, you know, like I said, different characteristics. Sometimes you have more insight. Other times you're left, in fascination over the, you know, the different things it could mean or be, you know.
Mm-hmm. Tabby said when the phone rang with a code they always used, she could hear her mom's voice in like a barrel saying, "Are you there?" And then, "Hi, are you okay?"
Wow.
Yeah, and I've heard of people, you know, having codes with, especially, you know, years ago, you had like two rings and, you know, it's me kind of thing, and then I'll call you right back, one of those.
We had one story where the same kind of thing happened over a ham radio. This woman was I think she was getting Christmas decorations out of her attic, and she came across her dad's old ham radio, and she goes, "Oh, I forgot about this thing," you know, so she turned it on and it wouldn't work. And then she remembered that it has to warm up a bit. So she turned it on and left it on. And then, you know, the lights started coming on. It started humming. And across the static, she heard, "Hello." And she said, "That sounds like my dad's voice, who passed away earlier that year." And she's like, "Dad, is that you?" And because, you know, it could be any voice, but she's just kind of wanting it to be her dad. Mm-hmm. And it said, "Hi, Pumpkin." And that was her nickname when she was a little girl. So she brought her husband up there to verify that, you know, this thing's talking to her. And he also heard it. And that was the last time they communicated. But, yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. And this is a really bad pun, but that was definitely a dead giveaway, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay. I promise I won't do that again.
And those kinds of stories are in a section called, you know, warnings, help, you know, hello. You know, sometimes it's just hello. "Hey, I'm bored over here. How you doing?" You know, whatever it happens to be. And other times it's intervening, you know, because somebody fell and couldn't get up.
Well, they didn't
need life alert because they had they had the phantom
afterlife alert.
The phantom, they had the phantom messenger. That's very good. Afterlife alert. Yeah.
Well, that worked out really well. But, you know, there are so many different ways besides phones that we get phantom messages. You talk about radio and all that. Lately, we get things through computers, surprisingly enough. It's not bad enough. They mess us up regularly. But still, you know, you can all of a sudden, you know, suppose you have, I've heard people say they've had Microsoft Word open, for example, or any, you know, writing app. And all of a sudden, things will start getting written. And it could be from, you know, at one point it was from somebody that knew who was writing that because they were very specific in what they were saying. And that is a little bit interesting. Also creepy, though, for sure. You're just minding your own business and so-and-so is writing you a letter. It's like,
you know what?
It's the Russians.
I bet in the next 5 or 10 years, we're going to be able to, like, just leave your screen open and have something. I've come down on my computer and my emails I left open, and there'll be random letters typed onto the email. And I'm not saying it's a spirit or alien or anything, but it's weird to see.
Oh, that's funny. Sailing Cat. Sorry. It'll go by too fast, but let me just tell you this, that she got a message in chat one time that said, "Stop it." Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
Yeah, now we got to watch out for the chat rooms, too. I've had EVPs on my show come through, they say they are. But no, I've never had anything talk to me and tell me to stop it. Yeah, that would be a little creepy.
Yeah, very creepy.
But, you know, they're always there. That's the beauty of it. I mean, they're always around us. You never know. I mean, do you think that everybody gets phantom messages at some point, but just some people don't realize it?
No, I don't think so. I think there's probably are a lot of people that get certain forms of it that would just discard the phone call and, you know, just dismiss it. But what tends to happen with these types of, I'll use phone call as the example, but like in the time slip examples, like call from the future predicts 9/11, it's very different because when you pick up the phone and you hear it, it's very hard to overlook it because you instantly feel it and you feel it as if it's happening and then it's real. And it's a truly unique experience for the person and all of the people who experience, you know, that form of phantom message. It's, they instantly know they're not listening. Like if you pick up the phone and you hear, gunshots and horses or whatever, you know, TV's on or whatever, you know, you're not, believe me, it's not going to scare me. You know, even if I pick up the phone, somebody's screaming, I'm like, you're not going to scare me. I'll just hang up on you, you know. But but when they get these kinds of messages, even on, you know, voicemails or whatever, and they play it, and they play it for others, and these cases you hear over and over again, that they feel it. So, you know, those kinds of messages you can't overlook. I'm sure there are, course, just like with any paranormal stuff, I'm sure there are ones that certainly could be overlooked. But the ones that have multiple indicators are harder to overlook because they have more substance to them, where you could more definitively tell that there's something wrong. You know, like if your keys move at like the beginning of a haunting, you know, at first, you know, you're not going to spook you. You're just like, oh, I'm losing my mind. And, you know, where are my keys? Oh, I thought I clicked the chair. You know what I mean? It takes a while, you know, and then you're like, oh, what the heck's going on, you know? So,
I have a key story.
Do tell.
Well, it's off the topic, but we just had a family reunion about 2 weeks ago. And my mother's cousin told me a story when I was, you know, a kid, like 20 years old, about how a ghost moved her keys, and I haven't seen her since then. So I asked her, I said, hey, what about that story about the keys you told me a long time ago? She said her husband just bought a new truck, and he put the keys on the middle of the kitchen table. And they've had experiences with spirits in their house, and it was always, like, you know, helpful things, nothing scary, really. Mm-hmm. But anyways, he went to get the keys for his new truck, and he couldn't find them, and they never found them. Years later, they were remodeling, and they were breaking a wall. They were breaking the wall between two rooms to open it up, and the keys were inside the wall.
Wow.
Good story.
That's wild. Wow. Yeah, that sounds like Donna's house, you know, in the Haunted House Diaries. That sounds, you know, well, and typical of anybody, like, in a flap area, you know. Shattering plates and keys missing. Yeah, kind of mischievous.
Yeah, and those are always fun.
Not in a wall, though.
And no.
Those keys are expensive. I mean,
yeah. So yeah, that would not be a good thing. I just got a final thing from Tabby about her mom thing. Mm. When she did a *69 to find out who it was that called, she got a response that saying that number didn't exist.
Holy mackerels.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the book is full of personal accounts of phantom messages, and some are really interesting, some very timely. And you have a few celebrity encounters as well, like author Dean Koontz and Harry Houdini. And even Sir Paul McCartney had an experience. Anybody want to share that story? I liked it.
Bill, you tell that one great.
I do? Okay.
Yeah.
it was when the three remaining Beatles, John died, you know, years later when they got back together to do Free as a Bird, and they were in the studio. And they had all kinds of electronic issues, you know, during the recording. And and in the playback, they, I'm trying to remember the exact.
Well, remember, they used to put messages in their songs purposely.
Yeah, right. And they heard, I think he said it sounded like John in it, but, and there was also a song in it that was, you know, known to them, you know, like it was their thing. And Paul said, that's John, you know, he likes it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they all agreed. All three of them said it was really weird. The engineer, I mean, all of them, they were all like, well, this is really weird. And so, you know, and that's kind of, I guess, not kind of like an EVP kind of thing, but it does seem to be completely random as to who gets phantom messages, unless it's part of a haunting, of course, then it's, you know, just another really interesting dimension to it. But, yeah, that is a fascinating part of it.
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, you know, we talked about certain types of people maybe, or not that, but people missing messages. But do you think in your research, have you found that there are certain types of people who may be more prone to receive phantom messages than others?
Only in the extraterrestrial area.
Okay.
Because if you go after it long enough in the right ways, in the right places, and it's part of a flap area or whatever, inevitably you're just more likely to experience that as part of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, my personal opinion, and I know what D. Scott Rogo and Ray Bayless, you know, found in Phone Calls from the Dead, and Callum Cooper, and, you know, everybody else who's written about it, and there's mm-hmm. been, you know, our sources are in there too, some of the ones, although a lot of our cases are first time, but still, the point is, they've all tried to find those correlations, and there really was none. And I agree with, you know, we got a section in there, what Houdini said about, and I agree with him. You know, you can't say that I didn't love my mother or father, or, you know, anybody more than you. Some people say, well, you know, we had such a close connection, that's why, you know, I don't buy that, because I think most of us have that. You know, you always think it's unique to you, like, yeah, but my mother was different, you know, but everybody loves it. But everybody,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't mean everybody, but you know what I'm saying. Everybody
yeah.
loves their mother. It's a
sure.
unique experience to them, and they think it's truly unique, but it's a unique, beautiful experience we all have, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's, I don't think it's random. I think it probably has to do more with the area. Is the only thing I can think of. You know, if you're in a flap area, I think it's more likely to happen. You know, if you're not in a flap area, less likely to happen. You know, still could, you know, like, why did the 9/11 calls go to this guy out of the blue? He had nothing to do with anything. And I don't think there was a reason. I think it just, the frequency caught the, I think the frequency may be catching these messages. In other words, they may be quite random as to who gets through, just by who's traveling on that road that happens to have that energy to send it through. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I don't know what you're talking about, Bill Hall.
Well, that makes two of us. No.
Well, you know, if you can all, you know, come together, we're all in the same boat there. But all right, so let me ask, with each entry, you list the characteristics of the encounter, and we talked about this, about message type, who it was from, frequency, messages, and the like. Now, while the methods of contact are varied, are there one or two factors across the board that seem to be in common in all these episodes?
You don't want to answer that, Jimmy?
Well, I'm trying to. You could try.
Oh,
you could try.
One common thing, like, all these were very different that we got,
yeah.
But one similar thing that we got was, I know it sounds kind of cliche, whatever, but there was a lot of static, like, even on the ham radios, the answering machines, the telephone messages. They it didn't come in perfectly clear. There was a lot of static, like it was a struggle to get through. You know, there was.
Static is common. You know, the beeps and insect kind of sounds are common in the extraterrestrial phantom messages. I think some of the interesting things that we found was, you know, we looked at all these cases, and after doing the characteristics, saying, wow, I didn't realize it, but, you know, a little over, I think it was 71%, had witnesses. I didn't even know that. You know, because you're going through it anecdotally, you're like, wow, we got a lot of, you know, cool things. just like message types. You know, when you look at, cell phone, that's cool, computer, but then, you know, television, speaker, cable box. But then, you know, we look at letters, and magnetic doodle board is one of the funniest. that it's really anything and everything, you know, from Morse code to our modern equipment. It seems to not be, you know, anything that is, in need of adapting. I think when we're using electronics and frequencies and things like that, I think we're safe to say it's not like they have to upgrade. You know, it's, a majority of cases, they're kind of unknown entities. You know, sometimes we clearly put them in, an alien bucket, or clearly put them in, family, or the illusion of family, maybe a version of that family from a different universe, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. We've tried to do the gamut that way of the types, like the warning, the helps, the hello, the stop, investigating, you know. And then the time slips, which are the most fascinating to me, anyhow, of all of them.
And we'll get to that. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, you mentioned cable box, and I absolutely loved the haunted cable box story. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. So everybody stay put, and we won't be long.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back, so don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
Hey there. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a great new radio show on Para X. Two hosts, 1 hour, and too much fun. Stephanie and Heidi not only talk about the latest goings-on in the supernatural worlds, they live it. They want to hear from you. They want to help you understand and guide you. And they want you to tune in. So, grab a friend or come alone to gather around that metaphysical table with Heidi and Stephanie. If you're interested in the worlds of the unseen, tune in to The Gathering Radio Show, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Para X Radio.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock for Dark Sun Rising on the Para X Radio Network.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Sounds like we're going to war, doesn't it? I like that. We're back with Bill Hall and Jimmy Pettinito. And as I said before the break, we are going to hear about this haunted cable box that I think was amazingly interesting. So you guys want to flip a coin and see who talks?
Jimmy. That's Jimmy's case. My boy Jimmy, go.
All right, forget it. I have notes for this one because it's kind of involved and I don't want to screw up the facts. So if you think I'm reading, I am reading a little bit. Okay, we call this one the haunted cable box. And it happened in November of 1996. An investigator, Rick and I, got called in to check out this house in Meriden, Connecticut. And the family's main complaint was they said the cable box was talking to them. We hate when that happens, right? So,
yeah.
About a month prior to this, the husband's name is Dave, and the wife, Anne, they have a 14-year-old son, Dave Jr. They were watching Seinfeld, and the family was having trouble sleeping lately because they had a 20-year-old nephew that lived in Florida who committed suicide a few days earlier. So about 10 minutes into the program, the television started changing channels on its own. And the wife thought maybe it was her nephew's spirit trying to communicate out of everything in the world. That's what she thought. So at that point, the TV stopped. So then Dave, the father, asked, if you're a spirit trying to communicate, go to channel 24. The TV and the cable, this is the old-fashioned cable boxes, remember, with the big red letters on them, numbers. The TV and the cable box switched to channel 24, then raced from channel 72 to 0 over and over again. And that's when the cable boxes only went up to 72. So they got a bit scared, and they put a Bible next to the television, and they began to pray. Before they finished the prayer, the Bible got thrown to the floor. So they went to bed hoping it was just a problem with the – of course – they thought it was a problem just with their cable box, which is normal except for the Bible getting thrown. And they said maybe tomorrow everything will be okay, no big deal. But everything was okay until about 11 o'clock the next evening. The channels began racing from 72 to 0 over and over again. And it was the 14-year-old son that suggested, let's say that channel 1 is A and channel 26 is Z. The cable box immediately switched to 25, 5, then 19, which, using that code, spelled yes. So now they got all excited, and they got a pen and paper, and for the next couple hours, they would ask questions to the TV and write down the questions on a piece of paper and then write all the numbers that it went to, after the question, so they'd decipher it later. And this is the story they got. A man claiming to be named Joseph Dana was murdered in their apartment that they were living in about 10 years earlier. And the cable boxer now, he's known as Joe. He claimed he was rolled up in a carpet and carried out of the apartment and buried under a porch down the street. And he even added that his murderer has never been caught. And he even provided them with a social security number. So this before they called the police eventually, but when it first happened, they started calling neighbors over and family members because you're not going to believe what this TV's doing. So they had a when you walked into the room, it would greet you by your age. Like the father was 44 years old. So when he came in the room, it would go to channel 44, almost like saying hi to him. When you leave the room, it would blink your age 3 times. So they used to have parties, well, not really parties, but their neighbors would come over and they would each go into the room one by one and it would tell all their ages. And, there's more, let's see. And then, so anyways, the father, after a while, said, this poor spirit is a soul in need. He was murdered. They were never caught. And he actually called the police and provided them all this information, and they sent an officer out. While taking the report, it got a bit awkward when the officer asked where he got all this information from, and Dave had to tell him it was from the TV. But in the officer's presence, he asked a series of questions that the cable box answered correctly. And remember, this is before Google. It told the officer his birthday, what his children's names were, his home phone number. It all answered them correctly. So the officer included all of this in his report that I took pictures of at the time. I said, maybe in 20 years I'll be asked about this. So I have it. So he called his lieutenant, who was a complete skeptic. And even though, it was answering all the questions correctly, he accused the 14-year-old boy of using some kind of second hidden remote, or maybe an upstairs neighbor is playing a joke on everyone. Still, it doesn't make no sense to do that. Mm-hmm. So during the investigation, the police discovered no one named Joe Dana ever lived in the house. No one by that name was ever reported missing, and the social security number provided never existed. So now the family got pretty terrified. And so that's when there's so much more to the story. I don't want to take up the whole half hour. But get the book and find out about this story.
Yeah, I mean, and there's so many other books in there. I'm going to get to stories in there. But, you know, we're talking about getting messages from radios and phones and computers and even Facebook. And, you know, that's not a good thing. We have enough trouble with Facebook without getting messages from beyond. But we've always, you know, I mean, we've heard about those kind of methods. They're kind of sort of normal. But in the book, again, you talk about time slips and communication from extraterrestrials. What did each of you find was the most interesting or compelling tale of, like, phantom messages that you discovered in your research? Don't have to tell the tale, but just kind of what really stood out to you and kind of made you scratch your head or give you a V8 moment or something.
You want to go, Jimmy?
I'll go first if you want.
Yeah, one
of the ones I found really interesting were this circulated around the internet maybe a couple years ago. It was called the Jack Freese emails.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, Jack, was 32 when he suffered an unexpected fatal heart attack, and this was back in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And his obituary, you know, described him as a guy who, he had a sense of humor. He laughed, you know, he joked with his friends. So he died in June, and everything was quiet for about 5 months. And then the email started. In November, his best friend, Tim, was confused when he saw a new email in his inbox, and the sender was his good friend, Jack Freese, who died 5 months ago. The subject of the email read, "I am watching." And the text read, "Did you hear me? I'm at your house. Clean your effing attic."
Uh-huh.
So Tim remembered the last time Jack visited, they were hanging out in his attic, and Jack was telling him what a mess it was and that no one could work up here in, you know, this kind of area. So his friend Tim wasn't the only one who got a message from Jack. Jack's cousin, Jimmy, also received a strange email in the same month. And the sender was his friend Jack, and the subject said, "Hey Jim, the message says, how are you doing? I knew you were going to break your ankle. I tried to warn you, you got to be careful." And he broke his ankle a week prior to this email as he was headed out the door, and only a couple people knew about it. So multiple people got messages from this guy, and the possibilities are, someone accessed Jack's email and sent them, but why would they do that? You know, and another possibility is that Jack, you know, you could set up a email or Facebook message to be posted like at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could have sent these emails before his death and then with a later date, but how's he going to know his friend's going to break his ankle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then another possibility is, then he was talking from beyond the grave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be.
You know, they never found any evidence of hacking or anything like that. But like Jimmy said, it's just, especially the attic thing, because it was just the two people.
Right.
So, yeah, you'd have to say that guy's lying. And again, why would he lie? And then what about the other people? And, you know, and the family, actually, I mean, they don't make any claims. I think one of the guys says, "Yeah, I think it's him," and another one says, "Yeah, I don't really know. But it's pretty cool, you know." So, people react to it differently. For me, I would say that the one that just blew me away was the Dodlinson case, and it was an honor to revisit that because we don't want to redo anything, you know, that's been done. So in our revisiting it, we were able to go back, you know, with the internet and with everything available now, we were able to go back and check the things that they couldn't verify. We were able to know, have, of course, the value of the future. And Gary Rowe was kind enough to talk about it really for the first time, his experience with it, as well as finding the journals for the people who, you know, investigating it and putting what their conclusions were in there, which were, again, not really put together. But that case had over 300 phantom messages appearing on a computer at a time when the internet wasn't around. in the 80s. So that's a fascinating, and it's a time slip, and it happened when they started renovating, and they brought up the original brick in a little cottage in Dodlinson, England, and that's when all started. And to this day, their water and electric bills are very, very high, which is, you know, of course, a classic sign of, you know, a place that is, you know, having going to have activity, or, you know, things of potential activity. So,
yeah. Well, there's so many things in the book, and, you know, I'm going to get back to ETs for a minute, because there's a lot of interesting accounts by people being contacted by ETs, by phone, by other means. And for those of you who are interested and a fan of the Mothman prophecy, John Keel has a couple of stories in there. And also some include the Men in Black. And Nick Redfern talks about the Men in Black there, too. So, but I'm curious, both of you again, what's your opinion of impending alien disclosure? You think it's more like the close, would be like the most close encounter kind, rather than just phantom ones written in a message? Because I've had a couple of guests on my show lately that have predicted that we will have full disclosure in either 2020 or 2021. Any thoughts?
Well, I think it's going to happen just because everyone has a you know, camera nowadays. Back in, when I was a kid, I had a couple sightings, and everybody was parked on the side of the road watching this craft, and nobody had a camera on them, or, you know, cell phone, obviously. So I think with all the you know, technology people have on recording this stuff, they have to tell us something.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Yeah, I would think so. Bill, what do you think?
You know, I go back and forth on this. I mean, I was heavy into UFOs in the 80s. I've got tons of government documents. And, you know, one day you're 100% certain, and the next day you're like, you know, I really don't know what's going on. You know, something happened at Roswell. You know, it appears that it, you know, that it very well could be an alien crash. But, you know, it's just, so I don't know what they do know. I know they can't know an incredible amount, because we have not progressed in any way that really is indicative of possessing, or at least that's unless they haven't figured it out. But, you know, from everything that I've seen in research, there's no technology that we've introduced that had to have any sort of alien intervention at all. I mean, our progression seems to be just the way it would have been if we're discovering things ourselves. I mean, we tried to build the UFO in the 60s, you know, when after all these sightings and stuff, and it was all wobbly and stuff. yeah, the government did it. Canada got the contract, and it was built in Canada and stuff, and they abandoned it because they couldn't stabilize it. There was a good reason for wanting to build the UFO, and that was to have to not need a long landing strip, because when you're at war, they bomb the landing strips, and then you can't land. Mm-hmm. So if you have vertical takeoff, then you don't need that. So that was the idea. And the reason they made it look like a UFO is because they just saw these things flying all over the place, you know. But so I don't know what we know or what we figured out, but it's going to be an interesting story, whatever it is. But I think Jimmy's right. I think eventually somebody's going to, I mean, look at all the stuff with Washington. It says somebody's going to leak something, and eventually something's going to be proven true, and then eventually it'll break wide open, I would think. I don't know. Although mm-hmm. we've had technology for a long time, but it's, of course, at its height, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. All right. I need one more story from you guys, and I think, Bill, this is your story. And I chuckled, and it made me scratch my head, and it was really interesting. Story about the trolls.
Oh, yeah. This one is very exciting to me, because normally if somebody called and said, hey, you know, this happened to me, And you meet with them, and you're like, you know, they seem to be telling the truth and stuff, but you don't know them or anything. Yeah, they could be crazy, you know, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what was really interesting about this was I know the people, and I didn't know they had this experience. And it, I went, it was a good college friend, fraternity brother, and his wife, and Tony said, tell him about the trolls, you know, her side of the family's crazy, you know, so you joke, you know, so. But, and what was fascinating about the evolution of the troll story is that the kids didn't talk about it until they were older and they were going around the Thanksgiving Day table saying, hey, you know, tell a story or, you know, a cool story or whatever. Maybe it was Halloween, I forget, but Halloween sounds more likely, but I think it was Thanksgiving. And, Stacy happened to mention, she mentioned the trolls up, you know, that she saw in her room and she was scared and they were scratching at the window and very creepy, you know, and they would hide out in the attic eaves, you know, where there was doors there, they'd open the door and, you know, and what was amazing is then the brother was like, oh my God, you saw him too. And then the mother and the other, you know, they're like, they saw them too, and they were at two different houses. So even when they moved, I don't know if they went in the suitcase or what, but and the younger sister and the family ended up. They dragged the trolls, tried to get her a few times, dragging her out of bed and stuff. And she was scared they would almost get her once, but she, you know, wiggled free. But that's fascinating because as far as the amount of people who have seen these trolls, you know, we've got a whole family at two different houses, and I know them, and they all, you know, at different times, different ways. So it wasn't like everybody in the same room, oh, you thought it was a troll, it was just a New York rat or, you know, or whatever, you know, so it's just a fascinating, fascinating story. So that's a whole bonus chapter, but that's, it really is crazy because then you go poking around and you hear that, you know, there's other people who have this experience and, you know, then you wonder, well, is this just another, you know, paranormal critter or is it, you know, something?
Yeah, could be an elemental.
Bill,
or, you know.
You got to feel bad for the little trolls when they have to move from house to house because they have to get a little U-Haul and probably sit on a couple pillows to see over the steering wheel.
Right.
Yeah.
No, you're right. It's very dangerous. They can get run over.
Yeah, easily. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was a fun. An ugly cat and take him in as a pet, you know.
There you go. It was a really good story. And the missing muffins, and this is what I want to say because we're getting close to having to wrap up. But there are so many different things in the book. There's like 59 files. And as we said, you break them down into location, message type, frequency, message elements, more. You've also then, you have theories and discussions as a chapter. And also, this is really interesting, a chapter called The Next 100 Years, What Will We Know? And that includes an article that was printed in Ladies' Home Journal back in 1900 called What May Happen in the Next 100 Years? And I found that fascinating because some of the things that they said, like automobiles will be substituted for every horse-drawn vehicle now known, and wireless telephone and telegraph will span the world. I mean, they're right on the money. And then there are a couple that missed the mark, like I think they said that there will be no mosquitoes or flies.
No insects.
Yeah, no insects. But it really is interesting. It really makes good reading. And so, I mean, there's just so many different facets to the book that make it really interesting. I mean, some of the stories are fun. Some of them are compelling. I mean, it runs from A to Z. So it's really kind of a really good book. And you know, if somebody wants to find out what happened to the missing muffins, buy the book. Or, you know, what happened.
Bill, do you want to tell them how to get the signed copies?
Oh, yes. You can get signed copies of the launch package that has extra goodies in there at halloftheparanormal.com. That's H-A-L-L oftheparanormal.com, and Jimmy and I will sign it to you for you and include a bunch of extras. And, you know, I go over to Jimmy's house. If he's got like a 20 laying around, I throw that in there for you too. You know, that kind of thing. Whatever, you know, yeah.
It's worth their while, then. Yeah, absolutely.
You never know what you might get. You know, oh, that's Jimmy's medication. Oh,
yeah. Why not? You know, all right. Share and share alike. You're throwing goodies in it. So yeah, people can get it from there. They can find it, you know, as usual, anywhere where books are sold. But where can people find out more about both of you and contact you?
That same site, you can get in touch with me, or if you get in touch with me, you can get in touch with Jimmy, or if you get in touch with Jimmy, Jimmy will get in touch with me. Or we got a Facebook page, Phantom Messages Facebook page, so you can go there too.
That's always a good thing to do. And Jimmy, tell them about your show quickly.
Oh, my show is called The Haunted Chronicles. It airs 8 p.m. Eastern on paramaniaradio.com on Friday nights.
And you have kinds of different guests coming on, just like we do. We collect them and make it interesting for everybody,
All different kinds of guests and subjects, yeah.
Okay, that's great.
I was even on Jimmy's show.
Yeah,
wow!
I had Bill on once.
And he gave me a discount. He only charged me $500.
That's what friends are for. You know that, right?
I know.
You know that now. Yeah.
I really shouldn't even say the deal on the radio, but, you know.
Well, you know, forewarned is forearmed in case, you know, he finds somebody that's listening that, you know, might want to view his show. All right. Well, we've just blown through an hour in record time, so I really want to let you know that I appreciate you both taking the time to join us tonight. And hopefully I can twist your arms to come back down the line sometime.
Of course.
And
I don't send any bills. So this is more incentive, right?
I know. Yeah.
All right. Well,
great.
We will.
More like text range. Yeah.
We'll hear back from you for sure. The chat room was spilling over today, as Jimmy, you know, it's amazingly good. So thank you for listening in, you guys, the ones that are in the chat room, the ones that are going to be listening on podcast. And you'll find the podcast in 1,000 different places. And I'll tell you, Jimmy and Bill, where to find it after we get off the air. And but anyway, thanks, everybody all around. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Good night, fellas.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more Cauldron Stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2019. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompotech.com.